Soul winning can be a very frustrating and disappointing experience. We meet many obstacles, many excuses, many barriers, and much resistance. But in John chapter 4, we can see the greatest ever soul winner at work and how he persevered despite 10 barriers and obstacles being thrown up in his way. I'd like to briefly take you through these 10 obstacles. The first one is suspicion. You'll notice in verse 9, when Jesus is speaking to the woman of Samaria, she says, "How is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria?" She's saying, there's got to be something behind your agenda. You're not just after my soul. She's very sceptical of his motives, very suspicious. How is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, who am a Samaritan? The second obstacle is prejudice. Again, in that same verse, she says, "The Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans." Here's some kind of historical hostility that's being raised, that's created a prejudgment in her heart, a bias against him. And we encounter that all the time, don't we, when we're seeking to win souls to Christ. People have already made their judgments. They have already got biases, and they are already prejudiced against the messenger, maybe, and certainly the message. But then the third barrier and obstacle is ignorance. In verse 10, Jesus says, "If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, give me to drink." He's saying, if you knew. What's he saying? He's saying, you're ignorant. You don't know. Here am I, I'm standing in front of you, and you've no idea who I am and what I can do for you. There's this great barrier, this great obstacle, this great hindrance of ignorance. How many times we've felt that, speaking to people, if only you knew, if only you had some knowledge, if only you'd ever opened your Bible. Ignorance. Then fourthly, there's self-sufficiency. This is what Jesus is addressing here. In verse 10, he says, "If you knew the gift of God, who it is that saith to thee, give me to drink, you would have asked of him, and he would have given you living water." She hasn't asked because she feels self-sufficient. She doesn't see her needs. In fact, he's saying to her, really, you're seeing my needs for physical water, but you're totally blind to your own needs for spiritual water. You're guilty of self-sufficiency. And then, fifthly, there's humour, sarcastic humour. We notice that when she says, "Sir, you've got nothing to draw with. The well's deep. From where are you? Where are you going to get living water from? Are you greater than our father Jacob?" You can see her. It's dripping with sarcasm, isn't it? She's trying to make a joke of this. And how often, again, we face this, don't we? We get people to think about serious things for a moment, and then they try and diffuse the tension by bringing in humour and a laugh. And then sixthly, that's just lies. In verse 17, when Jesus has said, "Go call your husband and come here," she says, "I have no husband." Jesus says, "You've well said, I have no husband, because you've had five." It's just outright lies, isn't it? She's just told it, barefaced lie to the God of truth. And then seventhly, there's flattery and praise. She says in verse 19, "I perceive that thou art a prophet. You're a good teacher. You've got the truth." She's nowhere near yet accepting the truth, but there's this kind of smokescreen of, "Oh, you're a good man. Heard that before." And then there's pedigree, eighthly. She says in verse 20, "Our fathers worshipped in this mountain." How many times you've tried to speak to somebody about the gospel and they'll say something like, "Oh, my father was a minister," or "Oh, my brother's an elder," or my sister was a missionary," or "My mother teaches Sunday school." They're kind of basing some hope upon some connection to some person involved in Christian work. They're relying somehow on their pedigree, their relations, their tenuous connections to truth. Pedigree. Then ninthly, she tries diversion. Verse 20. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and ye say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. She diverts attention away to church controversies, church difficulties, church conflicts, as an excuse for not considering this really seriously. Then tenthly, Jesus persevered patiently through all these obstacles. He keeps surmounting them and putting them aside. And then finally she comes with the last obstacle to gospel truth, and that's agreement. She agrees with him. She says in verse 25, I know that Messiah cometh, which is called Christ. When he has come, he will tell us all things. She says, I know there's a Messiah, and I know who he is, what he's like and what he'll say. I agree with all these things. But she's not committed to him. And Jesus stands in front of her and says, I that speak to you am he. And we know that he has won her soul. Because the next time we encounter her, a few verses down, we read, she leaves her water pot that she was somewhat fixated on, goes her way into the city and says to the men, come, see a man which told me all things that ever I did. Is not this the Christ? Her soul is won. He has overcome every obstacle. And now she has become a soul winner. May that encourage us as we go out to win souls.